Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
If you're paying attention to the headlines, you've heard about ransomware, a computer virus that locks your files until you pay a ransom. But did you know that more and more businesses are under attack? The key to stopping ransomware is protecting yourself before you're attacked. With Carbonite, if your business becomes infected, you can recover clean files from their super secure servers. Best of all, you don't have to remember to upload files. Carbonite does it automatically. Try it free at carbonite.com/podcasts and receive 2 free months if you buy.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Andrew Peach, and in the early hours of Sunday, the 29th of March, these are our main stories. President Trump says he's considering putting New York and 2 other US states under quarantine to slow the spread of the coronavirus. More than 10,000 people have now died from COVID-19 in Italy since the start of the outbreak.
Italy is now nearly 3 weeks into a strict lockdown. And while it appears to be working, the days ahead will now be critical in knowing whether it can hit its peak and turn the page.
And Spain's Prime Minister has announced a further tightening of restrictions to tackle the virus after being accused of acting too slowly. Having initially played down the impact of coronavirus, President Trump now says he's considering imposing a quarantine on New York. Around half of all cases in the US have been recorded in the state of New York. Speaking to reporters as he prepared to fly to Virginia, he said further restrictions in other parts of the US might now be necessary.
Some people would like to see New York quarantined because it's a hot spot. New York, New Jersey, maybe 1 or 2 other places. Certain parts of Connecticut quarantined. I'm thinking about that right now. We might not have to do it, but there's a possibility that sometime today we'll do a quarantine, short term, 2 weeks on New York, probably New Jersey, certain parts, and Connecticut.
I've been speaking to our US correspondent, Peter Bowes. I asked Peter how bad things are in New York.
Well, it is still the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States. About a quarter of all of the deaths in this country have been in New York City, just over 500. The hospitals continue to be stretched to the limit. The governor of the state, Andrew Cuomo, said that they would soon require 30,000 additional ventilators. They do have help on the way in terms of hospital beds from the Navy ship Comfort, which Donald Trump set off on his journey from Virginia. It will arrive on Monday.
You'd think it'll happen, otherwise there'd be no point the president having suggested that it might. How will it be enforced if it does?
This kind of situation would be really new territory to essentially seal off an entire state. So it's not entirely clear how it will be enforced. From the few comments that we've had so far from the president, it appears it would apply to all but essential travel. He did mention truck drivers, trade. It wouldn't have any impact on, although the governor, Andrew Cuomo, said that it would cause chaos. And he, in fact, questioned whether it could be legally enforced. Now, the president does have quite sweeping powers, especially during times of a national emergency, but generally it's the state and local governments that take the lead in preventing the spread of diseases like this. It would have to be a partnership between federal and state government, and with the state, at least the governor, not enthusiastic, it could be fraught with problems.
Another news in the US in the last hour or so, the state of Rhode Island is going to be pretty tough on people who arrive there from New York.
Yeah, it seems that the state governor there has come to the same conclusion as President Trump, that the risk is, as she put it, New York City. So the police have started stopping cars with New York license plates. The National Guard, the Army, is soon to be helping officials to conduct house-to-house searches and remind people, really essentially to find out who's there and to remind those people who've travelled from New York that they have to go into isolation for 14 days.
Our correspondent Peter Bowes in the US. Well, let's stay in the United States. And last week, the Allbirds sneaker or sports shoe company in San Francisco said it would give away free shoes to any health worker on the so-called front line in the fight against the coronavirus. The demand was overwhelming. My colleague Pascal Harter asked the CEO, Tim Brown, if Allbirds had any idea what it was getting itself into.
It's interesting. The genesis of the idea was actually from our small team in China. One of our customers there started buying and donating shoes to medical workers in Wuhan on the front lines. And as this crisis sort of escalated and came to America, we sort of thought it was a really neat way to contribute. And it was sort of something that we rolled out on a larger scale, starting in America with a donation of shoes and then taking it to the UK and to Germany, where we also have a presence.
Now, some people would say that this is a nice way of getting a lot of publicity for your company.
It was a simple way to contribute. We're certainly not trying to make it out to be anything more than it is. And the situation is significant and hurting a lot of people. We just thought it was a way we could make a little bit of a difference.
You offered the shoes. You said you'd give away free shoes to any healthcare workers on the front line. What response did you get?
Well, we've donated now north of $1 million worth of shoes, which has been great. The response has been overwhelming. It started off as a donation and subsequently has become something that our community has supported with a kind of a buy a peer, give a peer sort of contribution as well. So, and I think it's one example of something that we're seeing around the place, which is sort of businesses jumping in to try and do their part and helping in this really precarious situation. So,
do you think that the private sector, in ways we probably couldn't imagine, has a role to play in helping people through this virus?
Yeah, we're a four-year-old business that was founded as a public benefit corporation with the idea that business can be a force for good. And I think we're seeing it with many businesses jumping in to make face masks. And I think it's a positive thing.
Tim Brown from the Allbirds Sports Shoe Company. In Italy, the number of people who've died from the coronavirus since the outbreak began has now passed 10,000. 889 people have been killed in the past 24 hours. In a further tightening of restrictions, Italy's introduced temperature testing for all new arrivals in the country. Here's Jean McKenzie.
Early this morning, a German military plane landed in Lombardy, Italy's worst-hit region, to take critically ill patients to hospitals around Germany. Because the outbreak of the virus has been so concentrated in this part of the country, its hospitals are struggling. At first, it was beds and ventilators that were in short supply, but now it's doctors and nurses. But the rate of infection is slowing down here. Italy is now nearly 3 weeks into a strict lockdown, and while it appears to be working, the days ahead will now be critical in knowing whether it can hit its peak and turn the page.
Spain's imposed new nationwide restrictions on people's movements as it steps up attempts to fight the coronavirus. The Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez made the announcement after the country recorded 832 deaths from the virus in a single day, the largest number yet.
I announce that the Spanish government will approve an exceptional measure tomorrow at an extraordinary cabinet meeting. All non-essential workers, I repeat, all non-essential workers must stay at home for the next 2 weeks, as they do at the weekend.
More than 5,500 people have now died in Spain of COVID-19, second only to Italy worldwide. And death in the time of coronavirus is a very different thing, as Damien Grammaticus reports from Madrid.
From his bed, he waves, a moment of triumph in a Spanish hospital. He's their first patient well enough to leave intensive care. But the medical staff are the only people there to see it. That's because every new virus patient brought in is immediately isolated from the outside world. Not even families are allowed to enter hospitals here. And Spain registered another 8,500 cases today.
They are positive in COVID.
It's the awful reality Esther Garcia is facing. She has COVID-19 and tried to isolate herself, but she thinks she may have infected both her parents, Maria Paz and Constantino, both now positive, both in hospital and beyond her reach.
You cannot hug, you cannot kiss, you cannot see the other. And it's the situation of so many other people here.
It's one of the cruelest aspects of this outbreak, the rigorous separation that has to be enforced between the sick and everyone else. It's so contagious.
This is where her parents were admitted. Many hospitals are at double their capacity. Staff don't have time to answer phones or update families. It's what happens when a health service is swamped. Spain didn't bring in its lockdown quickly enough or test enough people to track the virus's progress. So now people are dying in Spain's hospitals, hundreds and hundreds every day, not surrounded by loved ones, but isolated and alone.
It's a very isolated illness. People get sick alone and they die alone and they are buried alone and you cannot do anything, you cannot be with them.
Esther has found a way to reach her parents. A nurse has got a phone in. Her father is improving, but her mother's condition is serious. And night and day as the virus advances, more families are being separated. Sylvia, who works in one of the hospital's worst affected, posted this notice this week, saying she'll pass messages to those inside.
The family tell me that I say, I love you so much, I'm here with you, we can't see you, but I'm here. Something like this.
Sylvia is a nurse assistant, just 24 years old, delivering comfort to the dying. Spain's medics now shouldering the emotional burden of this crisis too.
Damien Grabaticus in Spain. Britain has now recorded in excess of 1,000 coronavirus deaths. New government figures show more than a quarter of the victims, 260, had died in the 24 hours to Friday evening. Around 17,000 people have now tested positive for the virus in the UK. Among them, the Scottish Secretary Alistair Jack, just one day after it was revealed that the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the Health Secretary Matt Hancock have also both tested positive for the virus. Here's our political correspondent, Tom Barton.
With three cabinet ministers now in self-isolation, questions are being asked about how well those who work in Westminster have been observing social distancing. Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock have both tested positive for COVID-19, while the Scottish Secretary Alistair Jack said he was following guidance after developing symptoms. All three were seen sitting together on the front bench in the Commons on Wednesday, while TV pictures showed the Prime Minister and other Cabinet Ministers crowded around the Speaker's chair as they left the chamber. The former Cabinet Secretary Lord O'Donnell said politicians needed to obey their own rules around social distancing much more strictly.
With the majority of the British population in isolation, London streets are pretty empty, especially at night time. Over 50 years ago, Ralph McTell wrote the song The Streets of London. He is now under lockdown due to coronavirus. Ralph McTell has always refused to write a new verse to update the song until now, to draw attention to the plight of thousands of homeless people in London struggling to find safe conditions in which to self-isolate. Standing at a safe distance, my colleague Fergal Keane has been talking to him about the new verse.
This is a story about an iconic British performer, a song that became a legend, and how it's been reimagined in the age of coronavirus.
Have you seen the old man in the club?
The Streets of London was first recorded in 1969 and became a huge hit for Ralph McTell. With its focus on the homeless, the imagery of lonely figures moving through an uncaring world, it resonates powerfully now, as thousands of street sleepers across Britain are seeking a place of safety.
Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London.
Under lockdown himself, Ralph McTell has observed the unfolding crisis around the virus with disbelief.
This is of biblical proportions, this catastrophe. It's just so enormous. I've never experienced anything like it. And each day that goes by, the realisation that this is no dress rehearsals, this is actually going on right now, and there's nothing we can do about it except try and follow the basic rules.
In shop doorways, under bridges, in all our towns and cities, you can glimpse the makeshift bedding from the corner of your eye.
Why is it important to do something you've always refused to do, and that's write another verse?
Because this is so huge. This is what's happening. It's just so huge that, you know, people often say, you know, they hate the idea of homelessness and they hate the idea of people sleeping out in the street, but what can one person do? I normally resist doing anything extra to the song because I wrote it when I was 22. I have different sensibilities. But I just thought, well, if I have an opportunity to say something about this situation that's positive and that perhaps I'm making a small contribution, I hope so anyway.
So how can you tell me that you're lonely? Can you say for you that the sun don't shine?
Do you believe, and it seems implicit in your song, that this is a moment where there's a moment for social change?
Well, I've already detected that there is a change. People do seem to be getting together and having a sense of community again. I can remember it. Maybe I'm looking through rose-tinted spectacles, but I think people did care about each other more. I grew up just after the war, and there was that kind of more of a cohesion in society. And if it takes some dreadful catastrophe like this to make us more kind, that's a word that should be gaining currency now. Being kind. Remember what you see. Betty Hyde's a human being. We're all in this together. Brother, sister, you and I.
I think kindness is a very undervalued and almost a soft word we don't hear very often now. And I think it's all we can do as human beings, realising we've got this thing in common. I mean, I said Prince Charles has got it, so from the top of the tree to the people on the street, this virus is indiscriminate, it will go anywhere. And kindness is all we can offer to each other, and by doing so, offer some sort of support.
Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something, make you change your mind.
The singer Ralph McTell. Also in this podcast.
Hey guys, Inger in Dubai here. A lot of us are stuck at home right now. Luckily, there's still a lot you can do in the safety of your own home.
Welcome to this lockdown yoga special with Voga.
Yoga and fitness classes online growing in popularity around the world as millions of people continue to self-isolate at home. The head of the world's biggest manufacturer of ventilators in Germany has said demand is 10 times higher than his firm's capacity to produce them. Here's Damien McGuinness.
Governments from all over the globe are ordering ventilators from us, says Stefan Dräger. He has doubled production and hopes to double again this year. But demand is 10 times what his firm can produce. The US alone has ordered 100,000 ventilators, which is the total number manufactured every year globally. And the German government has placed an order for 10,000 additional machines for German hospitals. But components come from all over the world, and Mr. Dräger warns that export bans could limit supplies and hamper production.
With healthcare systems around the world feeling the strain of the coronavirus, hospitals need all the help they can get. In Ireland, the Health Ministry and the Medical Council have suggested they could recruit refugees and asylum seekers if they have the right medical qualifications. This report compiled by Richard Hamilton.
I feel so frustrated because I always want to help people. And during this pandemic, seeing people suffering, I feel I should be doing something to help them.
This is a Zimbabwean refugee who's living in Ireland. She's a qualified nurse, but cannot work in Ireland because of the rules about asylum seekers. She didn't want to give her name to protect her family in Zimbabwe.
But without being allowed to do the job or the work, just sitting at home and seeing people suffering, my heart really bleeds.
The Irish Health Minister, Simon Harris, has suggested they could hire everybody and anybody who's suitably qualified. We want them and we need them, he told Parliament. But Nick Henderson from the Irish Refugee Council says that if the government is serious about recruiting migrants and asylum seekers, they should relax some of their more stringent criteria.
The critical barrier is that people who arrive in Ireland and claim asylum cannot work for 9 months. So they may have the skills and experience, but they cannot put those to use in a working capacity for at least 9 months. Then secondly, in our experience, it's difficult for people in the asylum process who may have the skills and experience from their home country. It's difficult for them to have those skills and experience recognised by the professional bodies here in Ireland.
Nick Henderson admits it's important that medical organisations check people actually have the skills they say they do. But recruitment cannot be delayed. He says the coronavirus crisis could yet have a silver lining, that we recognise the true heroes in society are doctors and nurses, no matter where they come from.
Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto has urged police to act with civility and restraint after they were accused of using excessive force to impose a nighttime curfew. The indefinite overnight ban on movement is part of efforts to control the spread of the coronavirus. Here's Ferdinand Amondi.
Videos were shared online of police appearing to tear gas and beat up citizens countrywide in some incidences well before the curfew began. Police spokesman Charles Owino said he regretted some incidents but insisted the curfew needed to be enforced. Many leaders and organizations have condemned the police actions. The Law Society of Kenya said it would move to court on Monday to challenge the curfew, which it says is unconstitutional and has now been abused by the police.
The security forces in Lebanon have dismantled a protest camp in central Beirut, which has been the focus of nationwide anti-government unrest. Video footage shows some tents flattened and others on fire. The Interior Minister, Mohamed Fahmy, said the move was aimed at preventing the spread of the coronavirus. Activists have accused the government of using the pandemic as an excuse to quell the protests, which began in October. Countries in Latin America are bracing themselves for a sharp rise in deaths caused by coronavirus. The first case was confirmed in Brazil in February, just after the carnival, and within 3 weeks it had spread to every country in the region. In Colombia, the government has warned that up to 750,000 people could be killed by the virus. It's declared a state of emergency. The capital, Bogota, has been in lockdown for over a week, and there's been a nationwide curfew since Wednesday. But as Matthew Charles now reports, the government's strategy has met with strong opposition.
The banging of pots and pans across Colombia's capital city. It's a traditional sign of protest and disapproval in Latin America. Just like everywhere else, people here are frightened, but they're also angry and confused by the government's response. That's because at the start of this crisis 2 weeks ago, there appeared to be no coordination between local and national government. Mayors and departmental governors were declaring curfews and closing off their regions to outsiders. But then President Duque overruled local leaders and said such drastic measures must be managed nationally. Now concerns are growing that politicians are being caught up in pointless power struggles and that the precautions being taken to combat the spread of the virus are simply reactionary and not based on science. In response, the government live-streamed sections of an emergency cabinet meeting to the nation in an effort to be more transparent. Ministers were clear, a nationwide lockdown is the only way to stop the virus. But hundreds of people took to the streets across Colombia to protest. In some of the country's poorest communities, up to 80% depend on the informal economy to survive. And with no employment during the shutdown, activists are warning that people will simply starve. Jorge Solano is a local community leader in Ocaña, a small town in the northeast of the country. He has a stark warning for Colombia's leaders. People are not going to stay at home and die of hunger, he says. People will have to go out to get food, and if they can't do it legally, they'll do it illegally. If they need to steal from their neighbor or kill, then they will. Each day the president is addressing the nation, and each day he announces new measures. But this disguises the fact that an overall strategy is lacking, says the opposition. An open letter from several doctors 2 weeks ago called on the government to take some basic steps to strengthen healthcare provision, including cancelling scheduled surgery to free up medical staff and beds. But so far, this has fallen on deaf ears. There are fears that without careful planning, Colombia and its already fragile health system are going to be overwhelmed. That's why Bogota's main exhibition centre is being converted into a field hospital in order to expand capacity. Last Saturday, prison riots erupted across Bogota. 23 inmates were killed and more than 80 injured. Prisoners said they were being abandoned. Now, hundreds of the country's least dangerous will be released and placed under house arrest, according to the Ministry of Justice.
Esta tarde fue asesinado un reconocido líder social de Putumayo.
In this news report, human rights groups say Colombia's armed gangs have also been taking advantage of the shutdown. Colombia is one of the most dangerous countries in the world for activists, who often fall foul of armed groups fighting for territory. In the last 2 weeks, three community activists were murdered in different parts of the country as local curfews came into effect.
In ese orden de ideas, pues los más afectados, como siempre, somos
Hector Marino is a community leader from the southwestern Cauca region. He says moving around puts activists at risk of infection, but staying in one place makes them sitting targets.
El miedo. Eso es una arma que...
Fear is the weapon they use to break up social cohesion. We're really worried, we're terrified, he says.
Con los tejidos sociales.
The concern is that as Colombia braces itself for coronavirus to take hold in the coming weeks, so-called forced quarantine for some appears to pose more danger than it might protection.
Matthew Charles in Colombia. Now, during recent weeks, there have been music gigs, classical concerts, DJ sets popping up online as all gatherings have been cancelled. Now around the world, fitness classes and yoga also taking off on social media platforms as different businesses ramp up their offerings for those stuck at home.
Hey guys, Inger in Dubai here. A lot of us are stuck at home right now. Luckily, there's still a lot you can do in the safety of your own home.
Welcome to this lockdown yoga special with Voga. Madonna meets yoga.
Own the morning. Maybe you don't wake up until 1 o'clock now, but you know, own waking up at 1:30 then to try to do something because it will set the course the rest of your day.
I've never had something be so highly requested before. So I really, really hope you guys find this useful.
Our reporter Stephanie Prentice went to a yoga class online before coming to work on Saturday, and she told me a bit more about this industry that's emerging.
I did a 40-minute class in my living room via an Instagram Live. And at the end, the teacher just said anyone that wanted to make a PayPal donation could do so via a link on her page. So that's one of the informal business models we're starting to see as these lockdowns develop. And while a lot of people on social media seem to initially respond to lockdowns by drinking wine and eating crisps, I spoke to a few trainers from countries here in Europe just before we came on air, and they said that tide seems to be turning. After a week or a few weeks, depending where you are, people are now seeking out fitness on social media channels in huge numbers. One of them even said to me he couldn't keep up with his message requests. And people are finding those people on video platforms also like Zoom and House Party that we've seen taking off during this time.
So people want to keep fit, and also the people who are running the classes need to keep working. They can't run their face-to-face classes, so they have this crowdfunding model that you've experienced. And as well as physical fitness, there are other reasons for us all to do this kind of thing as well.
Indeed. So as with a lot of industries that rely on personal contact, those people who work as fitness teachers or yoga instructors are unable to earn money for the duration of social distancing measures. And so taking classes online is a way of supporting the people and the classes that you love and making sure their businesses get through this time. Now, I spoke to Sarah Mariko of Mariko Body. She's moved her entire business to Instagram and the video app Zoom, and she was trying to see this as a positive opportunity.
I think people now more than ever need the support, need the motivation, and they're looking for someone to turn to just to keep them active and to keep them motivated on a daily basis. I think more than anything, not just keeping everyone moving and keeping people active, but I think it's a sense of community, and that spirit, that underlying sense of community has really come through.
And Sarah also told me the support that trainers and teachers are giving out is coming back to them. So there's various payment models emerging, from the voluntary transfers following classes or agreeing to a nominal fee before joining a group on a video platform. So a symbiotic dynamic seems to be emerging as everyone's trying to help each other get through this time. And while we've been on air, a listener has sent me a link to a twerk fit class. I think that's twerking that meets fitness. And so it seems there's something for everyone out there when it comes to keeping fit while we get through this pandemic.
Well, that's our reporter Stephanie Prentice making me want to book an online yoga class. And that's all from us for now. There will be an updated version of Global News to download later. If you'd like to comment on this edition and the stories we included, do drop us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. My name's Andrew Peach. Thanks for listening. And until next time, goodbye.